Welcome back to Conduct Detrimental. This is Daniel Wallach, along with my cohort in crime, Dan Lust. I've been away for a few weeks. Dan has carried the, kept the ship running very efficiently in my absence. But before there was ever a Dan and Dan, there was Dan and Dan. This is a very special episode for me personally, because we're bringing back to our podcast the co-founder and basically the, the person who thought of the idea for the podcast back today to join us on Conduct Detrimental. And Dan, if I haven't already given away, the mystery guest, can you fill our audience in to the extent that any of them don't know who I'm talking about?
The guest is the one and only Dan Worley. Now, you might know Dan Worley as being the general counsel of the Tennessee Titans or the general counsel of Nashville's MLS team. But once upon a time, Dan Worley was a lawyer in private practice who had aspirations of working in sports law. And what did Dan do? Dan teamed up with another Dan, started a podcast, coincidentally, called Conduct Detrimental, and then the rocket ship was lit that led to Dan's ascent. So Dan joins us today. It's a reunion of the Dans. Obviously, we joke. I guess that we should point this out. This is, we just passed our 100th episode of the podcast in total. But for you and I, Dan, it's about a year in the Dan Lust, Dan Wallach era. So it's a reunion episode. It's an anniversary episode. Just a special episode.
I think we need, for this episode in particular, as if it's not confusing enough to have two Dans today, we have three Dans. I think we can't say the name Dan in a vacuum. It has to be Dan Wallach, Dan Worley, or Dan Lust. Otherwise, we're going to drive our audience crazy. But it just goes to show you that Conduct Detrimental is the ultimate feeder into a job in the National Football League, because we have a 33 1/3% placement rate for general counsel positions in the National Football League. So if you've been a host or a co-host, you've got a 1 in 3 likelihood of making it to the NFL as general counsel, or a 1 in 3 likelihood of working with Mark Garagos, or a 1/3 chance of having your own sports betting law firm. So the possibilities are myriad and endless.
We'll bring it up with Dan on the show, but the other reason, Dan, we wanted to convene today, a very an important day in Conduct Detrimental history. For years, you have had this thought of creating a website as a platform for people to write, and that is becoming a reality. We'll say in the next, by the time you listen to this, the website should be live. Yeah, but when Dan and you and I speak at different schools, I always tell people how, I got into the industry, was writing, same with you, I know, and we'll talk about it with Worley. But there, as far as I'm not aware of a website that helps with sports law jobs, sports law content. So if you're a listener of the podcast, and I know our audience has really been growing and I love to see it. If you want to write and you want us to promote your content, you want to get to see these big eyeballs, we're happy to do it. We don't make any money off the show. We don't make any money off the website. But we think there's an important void to fill by pumping out content. So if you write for your law school, you wrote a note, you wrote anything, we're happy to put on the website and pump it out. But we want original content, old content. We just wanted to create this as a sports law library, which we don't think exists. So conductdetrimental.com. If you are listening to this now, we'd implore you to just to check it out. It's obviously a bare-boned website as you're listening to this, but we have a lot of aspirations which start with content and promoting all the great thoughts in your head.
Yeah, I mean, Outkick the coverage started with Clay Travis working as a volunteer, I think maybe about 10 years ago. So as so many of us in this business or in this space have learned, it doesn't take a long time. You just have to be persistent and keep at it. Anyway, let's move on and bring Dan along as our first guest. And really, I'm looking forward to the conversation with Dan Worley, Dan Lust, and Daniel Wallach.
And with that said, we will turn it over to Dan Worley.
Well, it all comes full circle here today on Conduct Detrimental. We're like 100 or so. Maybe this is the 100th episode. I don't keep track. This is not like network television where you have the 100th episode of All in the Family. But I think this is a special episode because we welcome back to the podcast the person who created the podcast that made all of this possible, that invited me. I contributed the name. But our next guest, Dan Worley, the general counsel for the Tennessee Titans, way back in the day, only a few years ago, was my co-host on Conduct Detrimental. So welcome back to where it all started for you, I guess. Well, I guess it started for you before Conduct Detrimental, but welcome back. Welcome home, Dan.
Thanks, Dan. It's good to be back. And I think you're giving me too much credit. You and I both started this thing off, and what a ride it was. And I'm so happy that we were able to meet the criteria of only Dan's can host, and we got Dan Lust to fill in, and it's continued on, and it's been a really impressive to, unfortunately, unable to be part of it anymore from a host perspective, but really, really cool to see you guys take it to much greater heights than it was before, and happy to be back chatting with you guys today.
Yeah, I mean, it's a dramatic and really excited to talk to you again. This is, for me, the first time that you and I have had a conversation at all in at least 1 year. I think we've kept in touch a little bit through Twitter and email, but you were, a couple of years ago, you were one of the most visible sports legal analysts, not just on Twitter, but just covering a wide variety of legal issues like the Derrick Rose sexual assault case, Deflategate. This is a dramatic transformation for me to go from like a high level of visibility, running your own website called The White Bronco, which essentially served as a job board for, you know, a lot of, you know, law students and sports attorneys. So do you miss the action, so to speak? Do you miss the visibility associated with what you did a couple of years ago? Or are you happier now without having to keep tabs on everything?
I do miss aspects of it. Like my current job, I'm really lucky to have sort of a dream role at the time. And so I would say there's a different kind of action now that scratches that itch. But certainly the entrepreneurial spirit of sort of having my own firm, having these different projects going on, being able to have regular interaction with folks like yourself and others in the industry who I admire so much, and really force you to be up to date on these issues and to be strategically thinking and critically thinking about these issues. I think that makes you a better lawyer, a better person, and all those things. So I miss that. Unfortunately, sort of just the nature of being on the in-house side, you have to be a lot more calculated on what you can jump in and jump in out on. And, you know, when you have a firm, I think for the most part, it's a valuable exercise to be doing this, to be visible, to really try to show your knowledge, your value, to bring value to other people. Those things are all helpful. When you kind of shift and go in-house, a little bit of those things change. So I do miss it to a certain extent, but certainly very happy with the current role right now with the Titan.
So Dan, I've been on a panel with you before and I've heard you tell the story. And I know Dan Wallach knows the story, but we have some OG listeners to Conduct Detrimental who have been through the Worley and Wallach era. Shout out to the OG listeners. But there's a new crop of listeners that have popped up, you know, in the last year, with just so many, you know, exciting or just different stories, be it Deshaun Watson, Antonio Brown, the stuff with the pandemic, a lot of interesting legal issues. So we want to properly introduce you to those listeners, and obviously reintroduce you to those that have not heard from you in a while. So Dan, what we try to do on the show, in addition to breaking down new stories, and we've told you, we're letting you off the hot seat for and all the fun NIL stuff and all that. can you kind of, you know, lead us through your path, right? From law school to private practice, and then, you know, kind of in this media world, and then directly into the sports world. So floor is yours, Dan. I think people, it's important for people to hear path into sports.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll do a relatively quick version. So I've always been passionate about sports, and really the business side of sports too. Like growing up, just very into it. My dad was a basketball coach, so grew up kind of sitting on the bench and being involved in sports and just loving what sports did with building teams and building character off the court and all those things, and really feel like the value of sport is there and truly believe in that. And so throughout that, I always loved kind of the off-season cycle before it was really a popular thing. And that evolved, I think, even more into the business side of what sports teams do. So always had that, always wanted to be involved in one way or the other. The legal side, honestly, came much later in the game. Frankly, I was in college and had no idea what I wanted to do. I was essentially a sports management major and a business major as well, and took a couple law classes. And the only reason I took them is because I really, really wanted to go on this study abroad trip. And the trip that I wanted to go on was a law-focused one, and was able to have the honor to do that. But ended up loving the classes and loving the amazing.
Where was the study abroad trip? Don't leave out the good details.
Yeah, right. It was actually a traveling Europe trip. So I think we went to like 14 or 15 countries over a 6 or 7 week period. So it was pretty rapid fire. We were going to like 2 countries a week, and we would stay in hostels on the weekend and then kind of rally back up with the class in a new city at a hotel, and they have class in the conference rooms all week, and then we take off somewhere and meet up in the next city. It was a pretty incredible trip.
What college was that, Dan? I think I may need to put that one on the list for.
I know.
Dan, you might be too old for college, Dan. It's very.
You ever see Back to School? Never, Rodney Dangerfield. I'm still below Rodney's age, but I might have to go with my son. What college did you go to, Dan? I think in all the years I've known you, I don't know where you went to college. Not that that's important, but
I went to Miami University, so Miami of Ohio. I know you are at least. Formally, I don't know if you would say you're still a Miami resident, Dan. Are you considered that?
Dan's actually different Miami. Yeah, he's Siberian. It's official.
Yeah, I don't even refer to it as the U. I'm a New Yorker, so I don't have any affiliation or affection for University of Miami, but I still go by New York, which is where my heart is. But where my physicality is, it's Siberia. So that's pretty cool that you had a chance to do that.
Amazing. And I would recommend it to any student out there. I tried to do it in law school. It didn't end up working out, but really good experience. And it's, the time of your life to be able to do that and travel and get college credit at the same time is pretty cool. So, but anyway, that kind of sparked it for me. Ended up kind of having a minor in what's called business legal studies. So went back the next year of college and took a bunch of law classes too. And that kind of solidified that I wanted to go to law school. And so took the LSAT when I was a junior in college, which was probably far too early, and went straight through, kind of keeping in line with the theme, like was trying through law school to figure out ways to get into sports, interned for a sports agent for a good portion. Doug Newstead, who's his office is actually in Maryland, but I went to law school in DC. So it was DC, Maryland, close enough. And so was able to get a taste of that. Frankly, I think one of the great things about internships during law school and other school is you kind of figure out what you want to do, but also what you don't want to do, and learn through that process that agency side probably wasn't for me. Not that there's anything wrong with it at all. It just didn't fit my personality and my interests as much. And ended up doing the next summer, I did the big law firm summer associate thing at a firm called Drinker Biddle in Chicago, and ultimately started my career there as well. So moved back to Chicago, where I'm from, and started my career, did 2 to 3 years at Drinker Biddle. Amazing experience. I'd recommend, if you're a law student right now, getting a good base of law firm experience coming right out of school will, I think, really lay a lot of groundwork to ultimately finding if maybe that is what you want to do and be in a law firm your whole life. That's great. If you want to go in-house, I think that's also a really good path to do so. And it's a really good opportunity. So for me, that was a great experience. I remember walking into the first day being like, I have no idea what a lawyer actually does still, even though I had just been through law school and had a bunch of internships and stuff like that. And so that really, I think, grew me up quickly into being a lawyer. Ultimately, while I was happy with what I was doing there, I wasn't getting much sports work. So I remember I had one case that was like involving a NASCAR driver, but wasn't scratching that itch, and found an opportunity to lateral to another law firm called Foley and Lardner, who I knew had a significant sports law practice. Went through that interview process. They gave me no promises that I would be given sports workers going into the sports practice. So I decided to take that risk anyway. It was a good firm. It was there wasn't a whole lot of decision-making needed there. Jumped over, again, starting off in commercial litigation, was purely a commercial litigator, was representing some pharmacy clients and just kind of clients across the board.
How many years
slowly developed. I was at Foley for about 4 years and was able to, while I was there, a lot of their sports law practice, much of it wasn't based out of Chicago. So it was in other offices. So it took a minute, but was able to network internally within the law firm, meet all the people that are working in sports, and slowly my practice drifted over to sports there. And really, Foley is mostly a team side representation practice. So their big thing, at least they're doing when I was there, I think it's slightly changed with some of the people coming and going, but was doing team side deals. So they represented the Ricketts when they bought the Cubs, for example, and things like that. And they did, those are huge deals, and they did a number of them. And again, really great people, great lawyers, had a wonderful experience there. Still keep in touch with a lot of the people I worked with there today. Ultimately was hit, 6 or 7 years practicing as a lawyer in Chicago. Kind of looked around. Personally, there was two things going on. One thing was my wife, who was just finishing up her PhD in psychology at the time in Chicago, and was looking for her next role. And I was kind of looking around. It was kind of the point where you're either up for partner or you're kind of doing something else. And, you know, I think if I would have stuck it out, I hopefully would have had a chance to make partner there, but kind of decided that the big law firm thing wasn't necessarily the path that I wanted to go down. And again, I think that big law firm thing is great for some people. I just decided it wasn't for me, kind of looking around the people that I saw in the office and kind of what my goals were at the time and still are. So decided, my wife had this crazy idea to join the U.S. Army. And so we jumped on that. It was kind of her career dream to have this opportunity. She's a psychologist now. She just got promoted to major. So congratulations to my wife, Liz, on that piece.
Shout out to Liz.
Yeah. So that, as you guys know, when you join the Army, they kind of tell you where to go. So they told us to go to Augusta, Georgia. So we packed up. Moved from downtown Chicago to Augusta, Georgia, which was quite the shift. I was fortunate enough during our 1 year in Augusta to be able to work remotely for Foley still. They offered me that opportunity. But at that time, I started really thinking about, I'd always loved the writing side, the media side. Had, while I was at Foley, started a website called Sports Law 101, where I started writing and was part of a network there, which is a fun thing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, while I was in Augusta, started The White Bronco, which was a sports law blog where wrote a lot, had some resources on there, had some case documents, had, I think, ultimately became noted for its job board as much as anything, and started getting really heavily involved on Twitter and really that was it. I think social media landscape has shifted now, or we weren't quite doing those things then, but Twitter especially. And that was really, frankly, the time that this podcast, at least in my brain, the seed was planted, right? I've always been a huge podcast consumer, even in the early days, really adopted to it. And in preparing for this, I was trying to remember when we even started this, Dan. Was that like 2016, 17?
No, I think the trigger for it was you and I met very briefly at the Sports Lawyers Association annual mm-hmm. conference in, I think it was in Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland, May of 2015. 15, and then that yeah. was the impetus for us doing some kind of a Foley and Lardner event together, where your law firm and the SLA co-sponsored it. It was basically current issues in sports law, and I was speaking at the firm. You didn't attend that day. I think you had already bailed out remotely from Foley and Lardner, but I think you and I started to gravitate yeah. a little bit towards interacting with each other a little bit more frequently beginning in 2005. And then the flame that the match that ignited the fire was Deflategate. And you and I seemed to be, you know, quite visible around that topic. And I think we began to appear in a lot of articles together, and just we were like side by side on a lot of sports law stories.
Yep.
And I think that led to you deciding to take it to the next level with a sports law podcast. I recall that it was your idea, but for me, it was Deflategate leading into the idea for a podcast that you came up with first.
I don't want to take too much credit. I do remember thinking that I want to do this podcast. And it wasn't until I talked about it with you, knowing how good of a podcast host you would be, Dan, and you have a way with words.
I'm still struggling with it, honestly. It's better, I'll go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt, but it's such a struggle to go from, you know, being asked questions to being the person who now has to compose or, you know, script out, you know, a whole show. And it's and I still struggle with it. But anyway, continue on our journey.
I was just saying.
It's like
I think
Muhammad Ali saying he's not a good boxer. Dan, relax. Give yourself a
But yeah, so until I kind of had you on the hook, it wasn't going to happen. So we'd launched it. It was a lot of fun. You could probably still go back and listen to those early episodes. I think it went through, you know, a lot of trial and error, but always had fun. Always tried to bring some value and knowledge to the audience. And, you know, the great thing about it from my perspective is it helped me, I think, personally, just presenting, speaking, being on your feet. You know, we had some really high profile guests on there too. So just like getting the opportunity to be involved in those conversations and host it and just sort of see the organic growth of it. And then honestly, the biggest benefit of all this is the connections and the friendships and the professional relationships that you make along the way with any of this, right? And those are the things that ultimately are not only the most satisfying, but also drive your career forward too. So super mm-hmm. grateful for the opportunity to have done this for a little while with you, Dan. And again, like I mentioned before, Dan Luss, grateful to have you and some of the rest of the team kind of pick up and continue on. So
it was the next logical step for us. I think you and I both had our little day in the sun with Deflategate, and all of that was kind of new, you know, from I think 2015 was really the first year I began to get a taste of, you know, doing some like public legal analysis on sports issues. And that might've been around the same time you became more visible. And I think we both enjoyed it so much that the podcasting was the next logical step. But I really give you the credit for at least approaching me about it, because I from a technical standpoint, and it's true even to this day, I don't know how any of the back end stuff works. You were the one who, just like Dan today, with the help of some of our colleagues, they do all the work behind the scenes. I needed you to basically stitch all this together and put it on. I know how to talk, and I do a little bit of studying on the issues. And it's real. I think it might be easy for somebody like you, but you were so integral to making this happen. Otherwise, there would have been no podcast. And you're absolutely right. The guests. With the most, obviously getting to know you and having our own podcast together was a lot of fun, but it was a fantastic vehicle for meeting some of the real, good journalists and thought leaders in the space. And you're right, there is so much about it being all about relationships, and that's the part of it that I really treasure. Even today, when we have a good guest and be able to have an interesting conversation, tapping into that person's, subject matter expertise, that's still the most enjoyable part of doing a podcast.
Can I jump in just quick and this love affair, this bromance, okay? But this we got to give people the hard hitting advice. So you guys start the podcast at that point in time. I don't think either of you are quote unquote, in the sports world more commentating, and I think the podcast created a platform, which you could just look at your resume, Dan, and see that the podcast was some type of a launching point. But from there, you took a job with the Nashville MLS team. I think that's the important part. I mean, anybody can start a podcast, right? Our podcast, we have a lot of people that listen to it, but anybody can start a podcast, and you have to start somewhere, but not a lot of people. And I'm probably looking at one of the count them on a handful of fingers that had a podcast and leverage the podcast into a general counsel of a professional sports team. So I think that's the part of your journey that I find so fascinating that I think, it's kind of important for people to see.
I need to start taking notes at this point.
You might need to, Dan. But, I can't say this more, we talk about the importance of networking, right? And we bring guests on the show. We had Brian Windhorst from ESPN on the show. These are all different relationships that you could build, but it's a matter of what you're going to do and how you're going to leverage those contacts in that network to do something with it. So Dan, I turn it to you. Can you talk about how you personally, used your network, be it from the podcast or from your private practice experience, to make that transition into sports?
Yeah, so we kind of skipped a little step in the way, which was important for my career. And that's when I was leaving Georgia and moving to Nashville. And again, moved to Nashville because of my wife's job again. She got located here. I launched my own firm. Me and a colleague named Justin Sievert, who I believe you guys may know too, who's an amazing guy, was living in Knoxville at the time, had a college sports practice. And him and I joined forces and launched a firm called Sievert and Worley and ran that for really 3 years. And that was a pretty big launching pad from going from a place like Foley, where I was doing, probably 50% sports work, to now having a law firm and a platform to actually do 100% sports work, and was able to do that. And, through things like podcasts, Twitter, just old school networking, was able to build a pretty fun practice there. And given my background in representing teams, that was really the market that I chased while with the firm, and was able to, tell this story. Was super fortunate to be able to move to a new town. I mean, this just doesn't happen to people, and I feel so lucky, but was actually connected with my now boss, Burke Nihil, who's the president of the Titans, but at the time was the general counsel of the Titans, over Twitter. When I was moving, I had said something and he shot me a note saying, like, hey man, like, would love to grab lunch or something when you get into town. He was already in Nashville. We have a lot in common. He's a Chicago raised as well. Been just an incredible person for my career. But we got together. He's a really entrepreneurial guy too. And I think he kind of dug what I was doing as building this new practice, and kind of pitched him on our business model. Over the 3 years we did it, changed pretty dramatically and was able to get way more fine-tuned. At the time, I had a sort of a vague idea of what our business model was. I wish I would have been more clear at the time, but but was really lucky to have him kind of give us a chance to for me to come in and start working with him from an outside counsel perspective. And that relationship grew over the next 3 years, and they were one of my first clients, but was ultimately able to take that Titans relationship and client and then demonstrate that experience, and ended up, I think when I ultimately went in house, was representing, and our model was a pretty regular representation. So we had sort of monthly retainers and things like that, but it was up to like 8 teams or so. And that's really what my job was at the time. And I had was doing some sports gaming work, was doing some fantasy sports work, was representing some athletes, was representing some brands in the space too. But the bread and the butter really was the team side. So was doing that, building the business was really exciting. And you know, when we're talking about how I got my in-house job, I would say that the podcast and White Broncos have contributed to that, but those are all kind of pieces of the puzzle. I mean, at the end of the day, having the experience that I did was really, I think, what the employers were worried about. But all of that is part of the equation, right? And that helps grow your network. And frankly, so I had this business going. I thought I had a really, really good business model for teams. You know, we were low overhead business where I was basically working out of a WeWork at like $500 a month for office space, and that was about it. So we were able to compare to the big law firms in town and stuff. I was able to be really competitive on rates. I had the same background as those people, if not more, working in the space and, you know, in what we were doing. And then had this really tailored focus to working with teams. And so I was able to pitch all that to them and we're saying, hey, and we can give it to you for half as much. While us personally, we were making more money off that just because our margins were so much higher. So pretty attractive pitch. But anyway, this in Nashville, there's only at the time 2 pro teams. This new team just gets an MLS bid. Very exciting here. MLS team coming to town. They're launching in, you know, a year and a half at the time. And I remember being like, man, this, if a perfect client ever walked in the door, this is it. Like, these are the guys I have to get them as a client. This is like just tailor made for my business model. So, you know, did everything I can to meet the right people, ended up doing that, meeting with the GC, the parent company. She's great. We hit it off right away. Crickets. They don't hire me. Right. I was like, how are we not being hired as outside counsel for this? Like, this is like the perfect client. We make so much sense for them. And it just didn't happen, you know, and there's a lot of reasons for that, but it was kind of funny. But at the end of the day, because I was doing all that and out there and built the relationship because of all the other stuff that we were doing, when they decided they were going to hire their first general counsel, I was lucky enough to be on the list of people that they called to see if I would be interested, and ultimately was interested. This has been is a long-term goal of mine to do that. And so jumped in 2 summers ago now as their first general counsel hire and built out the legal department, was with the team as through their expansion season, or most of it at least, and through their first expansion game and leading them on the field. And then right around the time the pandemic hit, I guess this is right before that, but had gotten lunch with sort of Burke, who's the president of our team, who's kind of a mentor figure to me over time. And we just had gotten close by working together over time. And, you know, he was general counsel of Titans, I was general counsel of National SC. We were actually to lunch with the general counsel of the Predators as well, and talking, and we were kind of leaving, and he pulled me aside and he's like, you know, I'm kind of taking on some new responsibilities. Would you, I don't want an answer or anything, but just put it on your radar if you'd ever be interested in coming over to the Titans. It may be something that we could explore over time. And he was under the impression at the time that he was getting this new role, just overseeing our stadium and HR and a few other things, where he was just going to have much less time in legal. Lo and behold, about a month later, the then CEO, Steve Underwood of the Titans, steps down and Burke gets promoted to CEO. This is like April, I think, of last year, right in the middle of the pandemic. What a time to take over for him. But with that, then things moved pretty quickly, and I was lucky enough to be, you know, kind of his first call for that role, and then took over here in June of last year. So anyway, been here for about a year. That about wraps up my story. I'll stop talking now, but hopefully that gives some background into how the path went.
Yeah. Does the new CEO have anywhere near as impressive of a mustache as Steve Underwood? Is that a requirement for the job?
Man, he doesn't. And I'll tell you what, I don't think anyone could. Steve, who I've gotten to know pretty well over this past year, who's just a an amazing guy, really a legend type of a person around these parts.
We learned about him for the first time after he retired because his photograph went viral.
Yeah. Yep. If you Google it, that's the first thing that comes up. For better or for worse, he's most famous for his mustache. But yeah.
All right. Let's talk day to day. What kinds of responsibilities do you? I mean, a general counsel. That's like overseeing all of the legal aspects of the Tennessee Titans. Can you walk us through, you know, sort of the different categories of responsibilities do you have? You know, whether it's, you know, HR, team ops side. I mean, I'm kind of curious. I've never been on the inside. Walk us through a typical day in the life of Dan Worley, general counsel of the Tennessee Titans.
Wait, importantly, and former podcast host. Let's keep that in the pipeline.
Yeah. Former podcast host. Yes. You know, the day-to-day, this is a cliche answer for people who get asked this, but it's different, right? So this role is a generalist role. It's not, you're not a transactional lawyer, you're not a litigator, you're not an IP lawyer. You have to kind of have a good sense of all of it because we're pretty leanly staffed here. We have someone in our chief legal officer role, Adolfo Birch, who handles a lot of the external affairs, I'll call them. So government relations, league relations, and things like that. I'm in charge of more of the traditional, what you'd think of as legal things. So all the contracts that come in, you know, anything related to our stadium, HR, you name it, immigration. I mean, like anything. Last year, for example, I think I have like half of an MD learning about, you know, pandemic virus and rules and the protocols that not only the league imposed on us, but the city as well. We were one of the first stadiums to allow a limited number of fans come back in. But as part of that process, we had to come up with what's called a safe stadium plan and have, you know, some of the world's leading doctors, Dr. Fauci actually looked at our plan and weigh in on it and create a plan. And then more importantly, execute the plan. And so we had incredible amount of signage brought in, plexiglass everywhere, pods, zip-tied seats, you name it. Like, it was crazy. So that was sort of the first year of just some crazy big thing that popped up that no one's ready for, that as general counsel you have to jump on. But I would say, like, the traditional stuff you think of are all the agreements with the team, the stadium. I'm not as involved on the player side. I get involved usually when things are a little out of the ordinary, I would say. So we have a huge football ops department that comes in and they do handle all the player contracts or collectively bargains. There's not too much there. We have a specialist in that role as well, who's been doing this for a long time, Vin Marino, and he's kind of our salary cap expert as well. So he has that role, but I get involved in certain aspects of that and end up doing a lot of the employment agreements for coaches, general manager's office, things like that as well. So it really is just, you know, from the most important mission critical business things down to the things that you'd think are the most trivial things in the world. So drafting a waiver for the jump house for the kids in the pregame, right? So it kind of touches all across the board, and it's really challenging because of that, but I think it's also a lot of fun. And one of the great things that I love about being a lawyer, and I think in almost all roles this happens, is you're constantly learning, right? You don't know. I think my three favorite words around here are, like, I don't know, when people come to me with questions, but you have to also be able to back that up with, I'm going to find out for you. So it's as much about what you know, and, like, it's really more about the resources you have to be able to figure that out, whether that's needing to go to outside counsel, whether that's contacting someone at the league, whether that's calling one of your colleagues at another team and saying, like, hey, have you seen this issue? What did you do to deal with it? And those kind of things. And hopefully over time, I'll have less, I don't know, answers. For now, I'm just leveraging resources and trying to figure that all out. So I don't know, that was probably a terrible answer to your question, Dan, but it's really all across the board. And, you know, you talk to me today or talk to me tomorrow, it'll be completely different days.
I have a very important part two to the question.
Okay.
You mentioned in your practice, you know, after you left Foley and before you transitioned into the in-house position, that you'd done some work in the fantasy and sports gaming space. You're in a state, the Titans are in a state where sports betting is now legal only over the internet. How much day-to-day or how much does legalized sports betting factor into your position with the Tennessee Titans?
It factors in. I'll say that when legislation was pending, when for us, like the law passed and then there was like a year gap to before it was actually fired up because they were kind of drafting all the regulations and stuff. So it was a little bit more intensive during those periods because we're trying to make sure that rules weren't passed that were going to have some crazy adverse impact on us and that rules were passed, frankly, that would give us an advantage commercially as well. Now that the rules are kind of in place and settled, it's probably a little bit less. You know, we have currently we have one sports betting partner, BetMGM. So worked on that deal and worked through that. And then we worked through some of the activation with that. The NFL has some specific rules and guidelines to this sponsorship category. So that's a piece of it. You know, we're contemplating some potential other partners in the space as well. And then, you know, one of the other things that we're doing here, which is super mission critical at this point, is, and this is public to a certain extent, but we're in the process of just talking with the city about stadium renovations and building a mixed use neighborhood around our stadium. So part of that is thinking through like, hey, how can we leverage this legalized sports betting into creating an environment in the stadium and maybe even surrounding the stadium of having opportunities to not only bring in things like sponsorship dollars or naming rights or things like that, but also really having it be a platform to engage our fans and to grow our fan base. And so those are both things that we're thinking about. To answer your question directly, Dan, it's not something I deal with every day, but it comes up.
You raise a good point. I mean, you must be looking across the country and seeing what's happening in Arizona, Maryland, what lawmakers in Texas were trying to make happen, which was to directly involve the professional sports venues in the ecosystem for sports wagering much more directly, not just through sponsorships, but to be the operators, to host, mm-hmm. you know, on-site sports books, and maybe even to have mobile licenses, to be able to have a skin, to be able to more directly participate in the economic upside. Do you see a scenario where Tennessee, I think it may or may not require a change in the state law, but is that something that you could foresee happening down the road in Tennessee where you have in-stadium sports books or somehow create a sort of a quasi scenario where it's not really a sports book, but it looks like a sports book?
I'll never say never. And I think for those of us, and you remember this very clearly, Dan, but like, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, I don't think any of us could have envisioned that this would move this quickly in this direction and be where we are today. But I will say that, you know, the fact that in Tennessee, the fact that we're mobile only on sports betting is for a reason. And that's because really the idea of having a brick and mortar casino or anything like that in Tennessee is something that at least to date, at least from what I've heard, and I'm really not an expert in this area, but it seems unpalatable from a political perspective. So in order to do that, it would require an extra step here. And I don't see that in the near future, but again, never say never. I think I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about by like a quasi sports book, but like I envision a scenario where there's, you know, potentially a bar that has DraftKings or whoever, BetMGM, as sort of a lead sponsor of it. And there's betting lines up there and everything. And you can sit there on your phone and bet. Like to me, that's all permissible right now. I mean, it would kind of look like a sports book, but the bar itself wouldn't be the one taking the bets. You'd just be doing it on your phone.
Yeah, I mean, that's the model that I think in New Jersey, you're only allowed to have sports books at casinos and racetracks. I think the New Jersey Devils have built out a sports lounge that's sponsored by William Hill. You walk in there mm-hmm. and you engage in exactly the types of activities you just described, but they're not the ones taking the bets. But it's exactly as how you laid out. But I think some of the NFL teams in other cities are looking at the notion of having mobile exclusivity within the building and within a sort of a 2-block radius. I think that's the case in Washington, D.C., as well as in Illinois. So, you know, that might be something worth looking at down the road in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Dan, we want to be mindful of your time. We have one important surprise we wanted to spring on you. We're not going to be asking you about NIL. Don't worry. I see that face. You know, we wanted to use this episode. Dan mentioned earlier, this is not technically the 100th episode, but it's like 102. It's right around there. But we are going to be launching conductdetrimental.com week and a half. So, Dan, obviously you're OG, so you can write, but just for you.
That's amazing. Congratulations, guys. That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. The listeners of this podcast, or really anybody that wants to write, if you're a young lawyer older lawyer, law student, college student. If you want to write about sports law, that's the function of this website. So for the first week or so, the website will be pretty much bare bone until we get content from people like you guys, and then we'll promote it here and we'll promote it everywhere. But, you know, we're taking off, Dan. This was an idea, just my background with you, which you know, but while you and Dan Wallach were starting the podcast, I was introduced to you before I met Dan through the White Bronco. You know, I've told Dan, I first learned of him as being this crazy guy on Twitter talking about sports betting, and he was just persistent, which I totally respected. And then meanwhile, there was you, and I didn't know you guys knew each other, some random lawyer somewhere that was just posting jobs and different articles of the White Bronco. So I had that bookmarked on probably my number one bookmark, and I was looking at it every day. I was a law student looking for jobs. So that type of site, I don't think exists right now. So, you know, the audience of the show has been growing, young lawyers, old lawyers, but the constant is that people want to get into the space. And, you know, the way that you got into it, Wallach got into it, I got into it, was writing. And I don't think a platform like this exists. So conductdetrimental.com. If you are interested in writing about or writing or having any involvement on the site, or open to maybe having more podcast feeds, you know, reach out to us on social media. You guys know our handles at this point. But we wanted to announce that, Dan, with you here, because you were one of the founding Dans. Actually, just a founding person. You don't have to be named Dan.
Oh, great. Now he's going to ask for royalties, Dan. Thank you so
We are not making you off the podcast or anything. So this is all just a platform for people to get their name out, their work out, passionate about.
We're definitely monetizing Conduct Detrimental for our vendors, not for ourselves. Yeah.
Not for ourselves.
I love it. Congratulations. I think it's a great idea. It's been interesting because, you know, my website has gone away. Sports Law Blog has largely gone away too, which was talk about OG, right? So I think there's a space for it. And again, yeah, absolutely. Like, that opened a lot of doors for me, even if they weren't directly, but just making those connections. And really, I always tell young lawyers, like, hey, like, what can I do to get into the space? I'm like, you know, you got to put yourself in a position when the opportunities arise, because I guarantee you, if you're doing things every day to pushing yourself in the direction, opportunities will arise. But you got to be putting yourself in a position when that opportunity does arise that you can show on a resume or in an interview what you've been doing and why you are the most prepared for the job. And a big way to do that, and an easy way to do that, is writing. And so having an outlet for that and having a space to do it is great. Yeah. So congrats, guys. It's funny, just knowing that brought back some memories, and credit Dan Wallach for this, but I believe really when we launched the podcast, I remember you telling me, Dan, we need to lock up the URL for it too. And so I'm glad to see that it will finally go to use.
Yeah, it took me a long time before I locked it up. It was only about a year ago that I did that. But
internet trolls. Take that.
You had your chance between 2000 and 16 and 2018. But Dan, you're so right. Dan Worley, you're right about the writing. And Dan Luss, too. The writing, if you're really knowledgeable and bring a certain point of view and a prolific, you can skip a lot of steps along the way, because that really does bring something of a substantive nature to a mass audience. And articles, if it wasn't for the writing that I did around sports betting and Deflategate, I wouldn't be on a podcast or doing some of the work I did today. It all started with blog posts and writing. It didn't start with Twitter, that's for sure. And almost everything that I've achieved, whatever that is, traces back to the writing. And I wouldn't call it scholarship per se, but I would say showing subject matter expertise around, you know, like an article or a blog post, and you've done that in spades. I remember the day when you and I, our big, you know, our big platform, side by side columns in the New York Post about what was going on in the Derrick Rose trial. Was he going to get convicted or was he going to get acquitted? You chose the winning side. Obviously, you thought he would be not acquitted. It was a civil case. You thought that the victim hadn't shown enough to carry her burden of proof. And I took the opposite position, and, you know, mea culpa, you're absolutely right. But that was definitely a fun day. You and I occupied a full page, not just part of a page. The whole, one of the first pages, I think it was like page 5 of the New York Post. That was definitely a highlight. And thanks to Julia Marsh for setting that up.
That was pretty incredible.
I was going to say, Dan, maybe if you had taken the other side of the Rose case, you'd be in the Titans press box right now.
I'm waiting for the Giants job to open up.
Dan, we loved having you on. You're obviously always welcome back in any way, shape, or form, but we'll let you run. Thank you so much for joining us for this special edition 100th episode, you know, wink, wink. But we loved having you back.
Thanks so much, guys. It's great catching up with you. We'd love to come back sometime, and thank you guys so much for carrying the tradition along, and not only carrying it, but really growing it exponentially. So really excited to follow along in the future. And thanks again.
Our pleasure, Dan.
That was Dan Worley of the original Dan W. and Dan W. Conduct Detrimental podcast, which obviously is now we're in gear, Dan. Anything to add before we put this this reunion anniversary special 100th episode in the books?
No, it just reminds me. I mean, it's always good to talk to Dan, but it reminds me of how much I enjoy having guests, you know, on our podcast. I always learn, you know, something, and just always to bring in different thought leaders to bring their, you know, unique insights about their career and the stories they're covering. So I enjoy that part of Conduct Detrimental very much. But this is the first opportunity I've had to speak with Dan Worley in more than a year. He's still a friend of mine, but, you know, I've been in Russia. He's been general counsel for the Tennessee Titans. And if you can imagine what a day in his life is like, I've dealt with GCs from different sports teams. They work crazy hours. So the time just slips away and gets by. It was so good to finally have a chance to have a nice chat with Dan. So it was a great episode as usual. And I look forward to episode number 101, 102, 103. And Dan, thanks for all of your hard work in creating our website. It's going to be a really exciting next chapter.
Shout out to Stephanie Weissenberger, who helped put it together. Mike Lawson, obviously, and Taryn Sharma for just being Taryn and being a wonderful gentleman. So again, conductdetrimental.com. If you want to write, contribute, you just want to be a part of it and you have ideas for what we could do, competitions, symposiums, we are open to it. So definitely reach out to us on social. As you know, Dan Wallach, as always, is at Wallach Legal. Myself, Dan Lust, at Sports Law Lust. The show is at Conductrimental. And yeah, it's an exciting time for sports law, exciting time for the podcast, and now the website. So with that being said, we will see you next week on another episode of Conduct Detrimental.